Hi, and welcome to the Utah Puck Report. I'm your host, Jay Stevens. We've got an awesome episode today. I think this is episode 13, and we've got a great guest who's written an article that's it's definitely hockey-related, and our guest is hockey and Utah-related. And this is an episode that we're hoping is going to reach a lot of people and hopefully help some people in the process. Our guest today, Ben Meisner, former Utah Grizzlies goalie, and great dude. I had the opportunity to back him up a few times, and Ben, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Ben, as we talk, where are you right now?
I am in Bavaria, in southern Germany, in the city of Bad Tölz, which is just slightly outside of Munich.
Oh, wow. And this is where you're playing hockey these days.
Yeah, I've been in Germany now. This is my fifth year.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, this is where my career will continue and one day come to an end.
That's you know, it's good to know that that's where it's going to be. And I know that everybody that I know that's played there just loves it. And obviously, that's one of the great things about hockey is you have these opportunities to not only play all over the United States and Canada, but, you know, we've talked about on our show in the past, you can end up in Germany. Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it was unbelievable. I remember when I was playing with Utah, we had a bunch of injuries there, and we picked up a guy, DJ Yoletto, who had played in Germany for a few years. And I remember, like, when he first showed up in the locker room, I was kind of, it always been in the back of my mind that I wanted to pursue a career in Europe somewhere. And I was just kind of picking his brain about it, and he just had amazing things to say about Germany. And at the time, it was almost like a little bit of a pipe dream for me to end up here. But then, you know, as a German citizen, it only made sense to come back and play. So I'm really lucky I ended up here, and it's been a wonderful experience.
It's funny that you guys picked up a Utah native out of Germany. So DJ, when he played for the Grizzlies, you knew that he was a Utah guy, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, he had just come back from playing in Weißwasser, and I knew he's a Utah native, and I knew his he was going through some tough stuff family-wise, so he wanted to be closer to home. So he was an awesome guy, and I remember just picking his brain about it, and it really just like wow, like that really sounds pretty awesome. And yeah, so it was good to kind of meet him early on and kind of really piqued my interest, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's a good dude. And so you already had citizenship? You have dual citizenship with Germany and Canada?
I do, yeah.
Okay, so we want to get to know Ben a little bit more. Ben, you're from Nova Scotia, is that correct? Is that where you were born and raised?
Yes, I was actually born in a small town, New Germany, Nova Scotia, which is about an hour and a half south of the capital of the province, which is Halifax, which is basically where I call home now. New Germany is only about a town of, I think, about 450 people, so my parents still have a residence there, and they also have a residence in the big city there in Halifax, and I live in Halifax now in my off season.
Oh, very cool. Halifax is an amazing area. It's a lot different than Salt Lake, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's a nice city, but man, I love Utah. I used to, when I first came to the Grizzlies, like right after my college season ended there, I think in the 2012-2013 season, I just fell in love with the city. I loved it so much. I was like determined to come back there the next year, and I remember my agent was like, well, maybe here and maybe there. I'm like, no way, like Salt Lake, that's a place. Like I wanna, the mountains and the arena and the fans. I was like, no, I wanna come back here. So I really fell in love with the city.
That's very cool to hear. I don't remember the exact situation that you came in under. I remember I was backing somebody up and then you came in and that bumped me out. But I don't even remember what the goalie situation was. I don't even remember who we were the affiliate for at the time.
We were the affiliate at the time for the Calgary Flames, and I remember I was sitting at home and in my apartment in college, and I was just kind of, I was real beside myself. I was just waiting for the phone to ring, and I was harassing my agent like you wouldn't believe, and finally the phone rang, and they said, yeah, we got we got a team on the way to California road trip in the ECHL, and they've got no goalie. Their goalie at the time, Adam Morrison, just got called up, and they had Shane Owen there too, who was out with a high ankle sprain.
Right.
And they literally were on their way there, and they had no goalie.
Yep.
And I knew that Adam had just got called up. He was under contract with the Bruins there at the time. And so I showed up in Bakersfield, and we did the morning skate. And I was just like, so where's the other goalie at? And they're like, we don't have one. And I was like, what do you mean? And they're like, yeah, we just got like a, you know, a guy to sit on the bench. He's a local guy. And I was petrified, absolutely petrified. I'm like, man, like, you have confidence in yourself as a goalie, but in a way, like, it's always a nice feeling to know that you've got a little bit of a safety net behind you. And I was just a rookie coming in, and, like, I was literally the only goalie on the roster, and I was going to be the only goalie on the roster for the whole road swing, and we were going to make stops in Bakersfield, and then I believe we went to San Francisco after that, and then maybe one other stop before heading home. So I was all alone, five games right away on the road, and I was all the team head, and boy, it was a lot of fun. But you talk about being thrown in the fire right away, that was definitely quite an introduction to the professional ranks.
Yeah, I bet. That's one thing I've never thought about, a guy not having, and sometimes I feel like I'm not that parachute anyway, right? Just because in the East Coast League, you get an emergency backup in every town, and some towns have a guy like me that just sits the bench for whatever team comes in without a goalie, whether that's the home team or the visiting team.
Yeah.
And
cool.
But a lot of times they're not ready to go in, and
oh yeah,
so you just have to carry the load.
You know, Ian Greenwald, I think was his name, right?
Oh yeah, the video guy.
Yeah, he sat on the bench behind me in Vegas,
and he wasn't even a hockey player.
I know, he couldn't even skate, and like, awesome guy, phenomenal at his job and doing all the grunt work. But man, like that guy, like, oh. I had a hard time out there. Like, I'm trying to get ready for the game. I'm in the zone, and then, like, I get out of the net, and Greeny just kind of, like, just makes his way over, and guys are, like, ripping shots at him, and, like, guys are having fun with it. Like, they're just trying to – I don't even think they're trying to score. I actually think they're just trying to drill him, like, as hard as they can just to have a good laugh. And,
yeah.
Oh, it was something else. And but stuff like that, though, you'll remember it your whole life, and – helps keep the mood light, and I forgot all about Greeny.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was something.
I think I wish I could remember right off the top of my head, but I think he's advanced on in hockey. He came in as not a hockey guy and was doing video, and then all of a sudden one year he was doing some assistant coaching, and now I think he's moved on. He's somewhere else at another college or something, and yeah, so.
Okay, that's awesome.
But he's got Greeny. If you looked him up, he'd be on Elite Prospects because he's got games on the bench. So, you know?
Greeny, the video guy.
Zero games and no midget games, no junior games, and then right to the East Coast League. So that's pretty good for guys to get that opportunity. We have another local DJ that gets, you know, he gets some time too. And it's the same thing. He's like a, you know, Division IV men's league guy, and he gets out there and goes and has fun with it. But my only concern is what happens when it, you know, because it happens. You get put in. I've been put in a couple times, and
I you know what? It's funny you say that, because I was just about to say I watched the highlights, and I don't even know where I was or what season it was, but I saw like online somewhere, and Jay Stevens had to go in the net, and I was like, my gosh, like there he goes. And you did well too. You did reasonably well too. Yeah.
Well, I got a shutout. Yeah.
There you go. It's just that.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. You know, it had been, I can't remember, 14 years since the last time I'd been put in a pro game. So it was
awesome.
over 200 games that I'd sit the bench for Utah.
Great.
And it was And I was.
Well, you didn't miss that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's one of those things where the guys would make a double move, right? And they'd expect the goalie to go with their first move, but I was so bad that I was already still where I, you know, they're coming back to make their shot, and I was still in the first position because I wasn't quick enough to go for the first deke.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, well, I was lucky because it was one of the nights. It was a Star Wars night there, and it was a packed house. There were like 8,000 people there, and and they all know who I am because it was just local Utah guys, and I've been doing it for so long. So if I would have humiliated myself, there's nowhere I could have gone and got away from that one.
Well, man, you saw that guy in Chicago. What was he? Accountant?
Yeah, he's
and
an
he
accountant.
Gets through in the net, and he's made like 14 saves, like against the Jets, like a couple, like unreal.
Dude. Yeah, he had an unreal backdoor. Slide across the crease. Yeah,
a good save on Bufflin, and like after the game, he's like, yeah, it was pretty good. You know, I had fun. And
And we've got the crazy thing is the other Blackhawks emergency backup goalie. They carry three. And they let him take turns going to the games. And one of them is also a Utah native that's just really, when we start talking about being OCD and being, the typical neurotic goalie, right? That's a thing.
Okay.
That's him. And his name is Oliver Frege. And he's the other goalie in the Chicago Blackhawks system. So if it would have been another night, it wouldn't have been that accountant. It would have been the Utah kid. I don't know how that would have went, but I'm sure he would have done awesome. But it's just funny. I mean, it's every team has one. I had the opportunity. I could have gone and been the e-bug for the LA Kings.
So that would have been cool.
Yeah, I would have, because they just did it last year. They made every organization pick up an emergency backup like that instead of just having one in the minors. They all have one. So
yeah, I actually know a guy, Justin Goldman. He runs a big site called the Goalie Guild. All things goalie, I'm sure you might have heard of it. And I think he's the e-bug for Colorado. He's a Denver guy. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very cool.
He just lives it. Like, just loves it. Just loves it.
Yeah, it's just the thing, right? Once you're a goalie, you just want to keep playing. Yeah. And you always think that you can do fine at whatever level you get put in at.
Goldie might even take pregame naps as the e-bug, just in case. I don't know.
I e-bugged the other night. I did the morning skate, and then I heard and showered, and they're like, oh, what are you going to do? And I said, I got to go to work all day. I got to work at the radio station, and I got to go wash vehicles and do it a remote. And they're like, wait, you got a game tonight, man. I'm like, yeah, that's not a thing for me. I can't have a pregame nap. I got to keep up with my adult life. But
they give you a little bit of walking around money too, yeah?
Occasionally, you know. Most of the teams do give you a little walking around money. They do pay you for your time. And I got to tell you, the Utah Grizzlies this time, they're with the Colorado Avalanche. I walked in that locker room, and they took care of me and I think it's more to do with the equipment manager they have now. And his name's Chris Shornock. He's freaking amazing. And I walked in, and, you know, typically I go in and I have to use my own sticks and whatever. He came over. I had a stick right away, and, you know, it's funny they made me change pants because I had pants from last season still had the Anaheim Ducks logo on them. So gave me a brand new set of pants. I didn't keep them, but it's just nice. You know, sometimes you get to, you never know in the East Coast League, and you've talked about that in your article as well. You never know if you're going to get it taken care of or if you're just going to be, you know, they're just going to take every liberty to not pay any money into you.
Oh yeah. It's an unfortunate reality for a lot of, you know, professional leagues of all levels, not just hockey. You know, you look at the NHL and the AHL, the budgets are, you know, pretty vast. And then it drops quite significantly when you go to the ECHL, and then it takes another massive drop to the Southern Pro League.
Yeah.
And it's definitely it's an adventure. And it's always nice to hear stories like that of organizations that are, you know, have good affiliate situations and are getting help and taking care of their guys, and it's always nice to hear that.
Yeah, it's nice to see it too. Yeah, for sure. So Ben, you have your time in Utah, and it's awesome to reflect back on that. And right before that, I want to mention too that you played at American International College, which was a school I had never heard of before that day you came out of it, and I saw it on your mask or whatever. I remember talking to you about it. And then now we have a Utah kid playing there, Jared Pike.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that you didn't hear about it. We were pretty well-kept secret in the Division I ranks, maybe, you know. So So yeah, we were from Springfield, Mass, and small school, maybe about, I don't know, 1,700 kids. And
Oh wow, I didn't know it was that small.
Yeah, it was really small. I mean, like, my freshman classes were like 20, 25 kids. I mean, it was almost like they, you know, a lot of people made a lot of jokes and they called it, you know, State Street High School, you know.
Yeah,
it was a bit of an up and coming program. It was definitely, for most guys at the time, it was an opportunity to play Division I hockey. And it was an opportunity to prove a lot of people wrong who may have passed on them at other programs.
Right.
And I was lucky enough to go there. I really lucked out. I walked into a great situation. I played 20 games out of 32 as a freshman, and then maybe 27, 28 the next year. And then the following two, I played pretty well every minute of every game except for a couple. And, you know, most goalies will tell you, you know, committing to go to a Division I school is one thing, and then actually going into the situation where you know, or you even, not necessarily you know, but you're going to have the chance to compete for ice time is another thing. You know, with three goalies on the roster and different moving parts and stuff like that, like it's tough to go to these schools and really play a lot of games. I mean, you see guys coming out of Division I schools now who, they go there and they basically don't play a game the first 2 years, and then maybe they're a starter by their junior or senior year. And so it couldn't have been a better situation for me overall. It was a small school, which is what really appealed to me. I got to know my professors well. So when the opportunity did come about for me to leave and go to Utah there for the last month, having a small school like AIC really gave me a leg up, because I was able to do all of my classes from a distance online with my teacher's support and with their help and with them, you know, giving me every opportunity to continue to do my work just from a distance. And I ended up graduating with my degree, which is something that you definitely roll the dice on if you're a senior and you want to leave to go play professionally after your senior year ends. You definitely are rolling the dice depending on the situation you're in and the school you're in. Some guys will graduate, some guys will have to go back in the summer, some guys won't. And that was a major benefit for me to be in good standing there and to have smaller classes and really know my professors. And
Right. That's something you wouldn't have at a major university.
Yeah.
Even the University of Utah here, man, you have 300, 400 kids in a class. They're not going to know who you are or have the time to help you out.
Yeah. And, like, I sat down with them, like, the beginning of my senior season and said, like, hey, listen, you know, I'm going to test the professional waters when our season ends, and this is how it's going to work. And, you know, I want to structure my classes so that my second semester senior year is as light as possible. And I started the whole process as a freshman to make sure that by the time second semester rolled around senior year that I was basically barely enrolled in school. And sure enough, I worked it out with all my professors and my advisors that my second semester I was a teaching assistant, I had a night class, I had an independent study, and then I had like an elective.
Wow.
So it was, and I only had four classes, and so any tests and stuff and any type of work was all emailed to me, and I did it all from a distance. And, it couldn't have been a better situation for me.
That's really cool. So you've always been a numbers guy, and you talk about this in your article, how you knew, like, you know exactly how many goalies there are in your league, and you know where you stand. It sounds like you've been that your whole life. When did this start clicking as a goaltender? When did you know, one, that you're going to be a college goaltender, and at what point did you know that this is what you wanted to do? I want to pursue being a professional hockey player. How old do you think you were?
Oh, well, I always wanted to play, like, growing up, and my parents bought another residence in the city to move me out of a bad, abusive situation from a coach where I was playing out of. So they bought a second residence in the city to move me there to give me a better opportunity to play hockey while having their previous residence, my, you know, childhood home, where our farm was, and they continued to run that from a distance. And, you know, obviously in Halifax, we have the Halifax Mooseheads, major junior team. And I mean, the rink is unreal. It's 10,000 people. And I mean, like, if you play for the Mooseheads, you might as well be like the, you know, you're the big ticket in town and people know who you are. And so, like, I saw that and I'm like, man, like, I want to play major junior. But my dad always saw the odds I was up against. I was a smaller goalie. At the time, there's a little bit bias towards French Canadian goalies and just the way they were playing the game. And he always kind of was like, I think you should go prep school and go to college. And I wasn't really big on it, but when an opportunity came for me to go to prep school and whatnot, I loved the lifestyle, and that was around 16. So I just said, yeah, I think I'm really gonna put all my eggs in the college basket. So it must have been around age 16, and yeah, I pursued it I went to one prep school for 2 years in Ontario, and then another one to do a postgraduate year in, outside of Boston, in Winchendon, Massachusetts, small little town and another small school.
I saw those on your Elite Prospects. Yeah. It's weird to see, like, because you don't hear about a post-grad year for many high school kids, but they definitely do those.
Yeah.
They just don't talk about it as much. Every prep school kid I know had that offered to them. That was definitely one of the things I would have had to do to finish at the prep school I went to. They wanted me to – my grades were brutal.
How that came about. Like, I had basically verbally committed to a Division I university out of Ridley College, and they set me up with a junior A team in the BCHL. I went out there, and I just hated it. They treated me horribly. I was absolutely miserable, and it left such a bad taste in my mouth that I was like, if this is what it's like, then, like, I'm done. So I literally walked in the coach's office and said, like, I'm going home. And they're like, no, like, we're going to send you down to play Junior B. And I'm like, no, like, if I'm going to play Junior B, like, I'll do it at home with my friends or my family, and I'm not going to live in BC to play Junior B. And, you know, no disrespect to that league or anything. I know it's the premier Junior B league in the country. But for me, it just wasn't the right situation. I felt like I was moving further away from my dream. And when I left, the school kind of walked away from me, and I went home and was basically ready to quit hockey. And I enrolled in university in Halifax, and then I got a call from the former Boston Bruins goalie coach, who's now the goalie consultant with the Maple Leafs, who I'd worked with a lot through my prep days. He said, hey, like, the starting goalie at the Winchendon school just blew out his knee in Switzerland playing soccer with his buddies, so you want to come down and do a post-grad year at a school that's stacking to potentially win a championship and give it one more try at the Division I dream? And because if you're going to do it, you'll do it out of here. And I just kind of was like, I guess why not?
Yeah, what an opportunity.
That's how that came about.
Jeez, I've just never even heard of that. That's so cool that was an opportunity for you. And hopefully that's an opportunity for everybody that's in a spot where they need that. All right, Ben. So I want to get into, we're going to do a two-parter with you. Things got kind of pushed around today. I want to do a part where you tell us about your article and how you came about writing it. Obviously there's a lot of things that pushed you to that point. And then I'm going to talk about some of the things that are going on in Utah and some of the resources that we have in Utah for this type of stuff. And then on the next episode, I want to have you back. And we've got Dan Fregain, who's a sports psychologist, and he works with USA Soccer and the U.S. men's and women's national teams, and he works with Stanford University, and he works with USA Hockey. Like, if you have to certify anything in USA Hockey, you have to watch a video from Dan about sports psychology and trying to mentally take care of our athletes now. And that definitely hasn't been the case in the past, and goalies typically are the ones that take the brunt of, one, being known as neurotic, and two, just kind of nobody knows how to handle them, and so they kind of get yo-yoed, I guess as a term. They have so many ups and downs in the net, and nobody knows how to help you when you're down that that's the stuff I want to discuss, and it gets into a lot. So can you talk to us? I know it's right after you played in Utah. You that's you go to Germany in, was it like 2015?
Mm-hmm.
So can you run it?
Yeah, I think so. Boy, the years all muddled together here.
Yeah, I can only imagine. My day muddles together. Yeah. I don't even know how you'd keep a whole hockey career together. But so start us off. You wrote the article, and tell me about writing the article. What you called it? Is it just called that I'm not Connor McDavid? Or what?
Yeah, it was the honest truth was the guy who was I was working with who was doing the edits in the article that I wrote. He wanted to call it "I'm Not Sidney Crosby," and I just said, I know Sid. Like, Sid's I train with him and I skate with him every summer.
It was a Nova Scotia guy, right?
Yeah, it's like maybe we can, you know, go another way, because I don't want to, like, I don't want to bring, like, someone who I know into it. So, he came up with the article title, and it was basically the thing that got myself interested in writing it and got them interested in getting me to write it was the fact that there's a lot of people out there, athletes and whatnot, who are really coming out of the shadows to talk about mental health. The one thing those people all have in common is that the majority of them are some of the best players at their position in their respective sports. And for me, I was going through absolute living nightmare for a long time, and it was only getting worse. And, you know, at a certain point during the journey, I decided I really needed to get help. And the turnaround for me from where I was has been nothing short of miraculous. I mean, you had Dave Amonte on the show a little while ago, and he currently represents me as my agent. And I'm sure you could, you know, shooting the breeze with him over a coffee or a beer, he'd probably tell you what I used to be like versus how I am, you know, now.
Really?
And I've felt the change, and I've felt the way that I'm now living a life I never thought I would ever be able to live. And I just kind of looked at the people who were sharing stories, and I'm like, listen, like, I'm, you know, I'm a good professional goalie. You know, I'm good at what I do. I make a good living. But I'm not a household name, and, you know, I feel like there's a lot of people like me out there who are going through this because of the situation people like us are in, where we're really good at what we do, but we're not good enough that we're not disposable, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, those are some of the people I feel like who are struggling the most, because if, again, no respect to Sid or Connor, but if they came out tomorrow and said, hey, like, I'm really struggling, you know, like, there's going to be a big write-up about it, and everyone's going to have their back, and it's going to be great, and they're going to get the best help. But if someone like me, you know, walked in my coach's office and said, like, listen, like, there's something you got to know, like, I'm battling a lot of demons, I'm not sure that they would go through every step possible to make sure that I was okay, because, like I said in the article, it's a little bit easier when you're bringing in dollars and cents, and the fact that I'm a really good goalie, but not, you know, the best in the world, so that makes me disposable.
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden, I'm not really willing to give up my job on a roster because of the living nightmare that I'm going through. So then I keep it inside, and I suffer in silence, and it affects my life. It probably affects my play a little bit. And then before you know it, the whole thing snowballs. So the angle from that point of view of not being a household name and yet struggling so much with the added factors of what minor pro hockey is like in the U.S., which is essentially a revolving door at times,
yeah.
That's the audience I really wanted to reach. And I really felt like, even though I am a professional athlete, that I'm more like the common person than I am, you know, a superstar. I live more of a regular everyday life, and I just happen to go to the rink for my job, you know?
Yeah, and that's one of the things, and for those that haven't read the article yet, like, the beginning of your article talks about you standing on a chair. All you have to do is step off the chair and to commit suicide. And you were honestly in that place. And then you talk about the fact that, yeah, I'm more like you than I am these guys that you read about. I'm somebody that's, like you said, I don't want to use the word disposable, but your career, and we've seen it so many times. I've seen guys with concussions get somehow waived, even though they're trying to deal with a concussion. The guys will be like, "Oh, you're just not trying to get better," and they get cut. To bring up a mental illness in a hockey locker room or to your training staff has got to be frightening.
Oh, terrifying, because, listen, I can't even look myself in the mirror and say that I would be comfortable doing it, because I remember when I was playing my first full season in the ECHL, I tore my ACL in my knee, and I was basically faced with get surgery and have my season end or play through it and, you know, see what happens. And I looked at my stats. I said, okay, I've got, you know, 15 games in Utah. I've got a few games here in Fort Wayne. My numbers are all right. Can I get a job the next year if I call it a season right now and get surgery? And I just said, no, I don't think so. So I missed 3 days and I played through it. And I finished the whole season with a torn ACL in one of my knees. And to this day, I still don't have that ligament in my knee. And I don't know any different, because it's, you know, it's been like that for probably, you know, a large portion of my career now. It doesn't bother me, but if I was a teammate and I would look at, if I was somebody else and I saw me sitting there and they knew I was playing with a torn ACL, you know, and I'm sitting there and, like, I've, you know, I'm down and I'm depressed and I'm anxious, like, you know, would I really said, like, oh, geez, like, I don't know about the game today, like, and that's how I felt. Like, I felt like when I was sitting there before I did this, I saw guys playing with, like, broken bones and, like, torn muscles and high ankle sprains, and, like, you wouldn't believe the effort that they would do. Like, I'd see guys come to the rink and they'd be there 3.5 hours early because they had to get a massage and basically get their body taped together so they could go out there and play. And they went out there and they laid it all on the line like they had no issue at all. And I'm sitting there like, man, like I'm finding it hard to get out of bed, and I'm stressed, I'm anxious, and I can't be in crowds, and I'm scared to go outside, and I'm scared of, like, what might happen if I play bad, or I'm scared of this, and I'm scared of, like, if I get in a car accident, or, you know, you're just scared of everything. And for me to see guys going through stuff like that and playing through so much pain, I just said, like, no way am I going to talk about this. Like, they're just going to think I'm soft.
Right.
You know, and they're going to think I'm weak. And
so how long did you have to go? When did this start? When did you start having these anxiety issues?
It probably started when I was a kid. I was bullied absolutely relentlessly in school, and it didn't get any better, you know, as I, you know, grew up through the different, you know, grades in school. I had an abusive coach through my childhood, which is the main reason that my parents bought a second residence to move me out of that district to play in the city, to get me away from him and get me in a better situation where I could succeed, because they saw that I was dying a slow death there and with the coach, and they knew the gist of what was going on and the abuse behind the scenes, but they didn't know the full story, and, you know, but they knew and all they needed to know. And I really internalized that. I really started to really beat myself up a lot. And at the time, I didn't know any different. I thought, well, this is how it is, right? If you play bad and you get something thrown at you, or, like, you know, if this happens, he breaks a stick in front of you and then he waves it at you and you think you're going to get hit with it. Like, that's just the way it is. Like,
right.
And, like, it just really snowballed, because I didn't know any different. I was just a kid, you know? And as I grew up, I started having more trouble socially, because I just withdrew, because I was basically taught to just go out there, do my job, don't say anything, and just be a workhorse. And And yeah, so I really had a lot of trouble socially, and I just suppressed it, and I just avoided. I avoided people, I avoided relationships, I avoided talking to people, and then it really started to catch up with me when I was in the high school, going into university, because all of a sudden, you've got young men, young women, and you're just there, and you're behind socially. And then before you know it, like, people are, you know, they look at you and they just, you're weird, you know, you don't fit in. And then you really internalize it. And then before you know it, you're just not trying anymore and you're just secluded. And when you're secluded, then you really start to get depressed. And then, you know, before you know it, more things happen. Then you're anxious because depression will lead to anxieties about certain things. You start to fear going into crowds. You start to fear having to talk to people. And and then before you know it, you're in a dark place.
You keep you've talked about it twice in two different ways, and how it just becomes you don't bring it out in the locker room, you don't bring it up in your personal life, and both of those decisions become just kind of a slippery slope, and it just snowballs. And so we're running out of time. So these are the things I want to get to. These are the parts where I think your message could definitely help. And in Utah, we have had, in the hockey community, we've had 3 suicides that I know of in the past 2 years. I had a kid that I was coaching commit suicide 2 years ago. It's something that is hugely important. We have a high school here that's had, I believe, 5 or 6 suicides in the high school. And it's been among athletes, and it's been among just, you know, other peers, and it's a serious issue. And I think that what we're talking about now is going to be able to reach somebody. And we have a couple ways to help people right now. And one is we have an app in Utah called Safe UT, and it's just that that's what the app is. Safe UT, it stands for Safe Utah, and that app has a lot of different things for it. It helps you, like, if you see a terrorist attack or something that you need to report, you pull up this app. But it also has a suicide prevention or just access 24 hours, 7 days a week. It has access to crisis workers. So I would want to encourage anybody listening to this that this is touching at all. If you feel like that's something you need, I would encourage everybody to get that app on their phone. And then also I want to talk about the suicide hotline. It's a national hotline. It's always there. And without Ben, we're going to have you back. We're going to have to talk about all the different things, the ways that you helped yourself. And as a firefighter and as a paramedic, we have that. It's rampant in our profession as well with firemen.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we've been talked about, it's almost like CPR, is see it. If you see somebody struggling and you kind of get the idea that they are struggling and they mention anything about suicide or they're giving their prized possessions away, or you just get the hint that they're depressed to a point where it's not just they're having a sad day, then you need to talk about it, right? You talk Great. About it, you get the person to talk, and if they won't talk to you, you flat out ask them if they're suicidal or if they're depressed. And then the next part of that is to refer them. So that's, you know, see it, talk about it, refer it, CTR instead of CPR.
Yeah. It's so great to hear, because like a lot of the suicide and whatnot there's a few things you'll hear from people is people who are suicidal, they don't want to die, but they just don't want to live either. They're in the middle, and the reason they're there is because their pain has become greater than their ability to cope. Yeah. And that's what we're working on with people to help save lives. And to help do what you're saying you're doing as firefighters, you flat out ask them, like, are you suicidal? And because this stuff needs to be talked about. Like, you know, you see someone coughing up a lung, you go up to them and you say, do you have strep throat? You know, like, this is what we want to normalize, this conversation to save lives, because the depression and anxiety, like, that's the thing that I want people to understand, is especially as an athlete, like, you're playing through a broken bone or a fractured disc, or like that won't kill you, But like depression or anxiety or OCD, like that can kill you. Like that is a life-threatening disorder. Yeah. And it just needs to be seen as such. And I look forward to really getting into more of the nitty-gritties of that when we do part two.
Yeah, and it's not going to be long, man, because we're going to have you in here, and we're going to have Dr. Freegain in here, and we're just going to talk about it. Because the amazing thing is you're a survivor, and you're a guy that can help us and map it out and find a way to get from that point in your life to, like you said, you're living the life that you never thought you could live. And now that, you know, I imagine you still have to, it's a process that you still deal with, and that, but you're happy now, and it comes out in you. And, you know, you were one of the few guys that I played with that I didn't really get to know that well. I talked to a lot of the other goalies, and it was weird to me that when this started coming up, almost every goalie that's come through Utah that I've backed up, I can pull up in my phone, but you definitely were a shyer guy. And we've talked more in the last, you know, we talked more in the last two episodes than the 10, 15, or you know, not two episodes, but the two times we talked on the phone to get this stuff set up than we did the 10 games I backed you up. So it's good to hear you coming out of your shell. It's good to hear your message is going to save somebody's life. And I want to be a vessel for that. I want to make sure that we help somebody because it's in this community. Hardcore, and I want to know what you did to help yourself and how we can help others. So
yeah, for sure. I look forward to it.
Okay, well, and so that's going to wrap up this episode. Please, I hate to actually have to wrap it up, but I just think we can do this. I'm not trying to sell another show or promote another show or whatever. I just think I wanted to get to know Ben, and I think we need to devote a whole hour to how we get through this and find a roadmap and have professionals in here to talk about it. And Ben, it's amazing that you're willing to talk about this and be so blunt about it. That's exactly what we need. So I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
Just trying to do my part. That's all. I feel like I said, this needs to be normalized. And I saw other people doing it, and I just really wanted to join the fight too.
It's amazing. You're truly are a hero for it. So again, if you don't have the app on your phone already, get the Safe UT app. And it has 24-hour access to crisis workers. 1-800-273-TALK is the national suicide hotline. It's always there, too, if you just need somebody to talk to help you get through some of these dark times. And that's going to be it for us with our podcast. We're going to come back we're going to finish this up. To subscribe to this podcast, you can text the word PUCK to 57500. You can get it off the KSL Sports app. You can get it off 1035thearrow.com, just under podcasts. It's under KSL Sports. It's all the places that you get podcasts. It's Apple, so it's iTunes and Google Play. Someday maybe they'll merge. No, I doubt it. Okay, anyway, Ben, thanks so much, and that's it for us. This is the Utah Puck Report.